This is a replay of the Thursday night, May 25th, WGN show. We started at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday, evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoIP for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together, and in the first hour, at least, we're joined by Steve Probst. And Steve Probst has been publishing books since 50 years at least, since 1973, I think was the first one, though we'll find out. And most recently, those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM singles. So we'll be talking about that in a moment. And the last couple weeks, of course, we've been reviewing what was the first rock and roll record. I have the original edition, but there is an updated one as well. We'll find out if anything's changed since the last one. So, without further ado, we welcome Steve Probst to the Raleigh James Show. Steve, let's see here. I'll get my magic twanger out and put you on a line. So if anybody wants to join Steve, by all means, call 888-876-5593. But welcome, Steve. How are you?
It's been a while, so it's always good to talk with you.
It's been way too long, that's for sure. I was just thinking about that. And, of course, when I got your latest book, well, you knew I stopped what I was doing and started leafing through it, and it is just great. Now, the embarrassing part is within minutes I found something out I never knew, and I'm like, wow, I never knew that, and now I don't remember what it is. So
yeah, it's on page 213. Wait a second. There's no mind reading included with it, so...
But it is terrific, and the first question I had was, how did you narrow it down to 1,000, and why these 1,000?
Well, that's an approximate count. It's at least 1,000. I rounded it off for just to make it look better on the cover. I don't know. 1,000, can I tell you how I came about doing this?
Absolutely.
I was teaching a class at a... college, Cal State Long Beach, here in Long Beach, California, to people who are over 50 years old. You have to be 50 or older. One class member was in his late 90s, so that gives you an idea of the age range. And I would put out lists of records that I intended to play each class session with little blurbs about the history of these records. But during the 8 weeks of this course, an hour and a half each session, I could only play about 200 records total. Yeah. But I had many more records that I wanted to share with the class. So I put together a book to sell to people in the class. You know how professors are. They like to make a little money on the side. And sort of it sold quite well. In fact, it was double the price that I'm charging right now.
Wow.
And I sold out on that publication. So when Genius Publishers came along, they were interested in the idea, and they went through it and corrected all the typos and misuse of the language, that sort of thing, and voila, here it is.
Well, there can't be any misuse of the language. You're talking about R&B records. I mean, we're still wondering what Sweet Words of Pismatology was. So.
Okay, yeah, and I knew Vernon Greene, and we discussed it at length, and I don't think he had too much of an idea either.
I know.
He thought it up.
Well, that was it. I finally got in touch with him and talked to him, and I was looking for this great story, and I said, well, what does it mean? He said, I just made it up. I go, God,
right.
I wanted to hit him.
It worked.
Yeah, oh, did it ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, that's not the only, of course, nonsensical lyric. And then, of course, we get to doo-wop itself. Now, unrelated to the book, but before I go on, you were the one who started the first Southern California Doo-Wop Society, weren't you?
Well, I was involved in its creation. Let me put it that way. It was a offshoot of the radio show I did on KLON out of Long Beach for a decade in the 1980s. And fans of the show thought no one else loved doo-wop except that particular person, but they found out there were many other people that loved doo-wop, and they came together and put together a society that presented, God, I don't know how many, maybe 50 shows in Southern California from the 1980s, late 1980s until, 20 years, maybe 30 years later. Brought in acts from New York City, like the Dubs and the Counts from Indianapolis, and lots of local groups and local acts who sadly are no longer with us, like Don Julian and the Meadowlarks and Richard Berry.
I know.
We had Hunter Hancock. He came in and we presented him a special award. I and a friend of mine drove him in from his nursing home in Montclair. He was up in age then, and here he is on the stage, and people are giving these elaborate speeches about how much they loved him, and he was standing right in front of me, and I could feel he was getting weaker and weaker because he was, sort of frail at the time. He was really up in years, and he started to collapse, so I sort of had to hold him up as he accepted all the adulation of the crowd.
Well, thank God he lived to hear it, though. As your book points out, in many cases, you can't really talk L.A. records back in the day without talking about Huggy Boy.
He was
one who I don't think ever in many ways got his just due. You know, Art LeBeau was such a big businessman and a wonderful businessman, but Huggy, as you well know and you know firsthand, was anything but a businessman, and I thought he should have been a lot more celebrated than he was.
Well, I think the racetrack had something to do with it.
I know that. My favorite story, and you've probably heard it, was, of course, he went away for a year and a day on income tax evasion, and because he didn't pay the money when he would do the concerts. And he actually said to the judge before the sentencing, well, Your Honor, I'm sorry. I didn't know I was supposed to give the government a cut.
You know, that year and a day, he translated into... When Little Julian Herrera came back to El Monte Legion Stadium, Huggy Boy thought up, he's been gone a year and a day, but now he's here to stay.
Right. That was a euphemism for just got out of the joint, you know, because that was it, a year and a day. And, of course, Little Julian Herrera was terrific, but I think too many underage girls did him in, if I'm not mistaken.
At Griffith Park, I believe.
Yeah.
It was a place... place to go with your bottle of whatever you're drinking in the evening, and
speaking of that,
use your imagination. Yeah, go ahead.
I had to laugh when I read about All Night Long, because of course anybody from Southern California, particularly who used to be at that club on Lancashire Boulevard where Joe Houston would be doing All Night Long all the time, and your story is just terrific about the All Night Long shout. So tell us about that.
Well, actually, Huggy Boy was involved in that. It was a pretty wild session. There were a couple of, in fact, I wrote a couple of notes about sessions that were more or less drink all you can, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah.
And that was All Night Long. He got some fans together. and Huggy Boy was sort of leading the chant, and the engineer, his one complaint about the session was you could hear the bottles dropping on the floor. Now another record that was put together in a situation, best resembles a riot. Believe it or not, Wally Roker told me this story. You knew Wally,
oh,
I'm
yeah,
sure.
Of course.
Great guy. Was Twist and Shout, the Isley Brothers. That was a gang, well, not actual gangs, but it was like a gang war. People were fighting throughout the session. And Luther Dixon had to put together the tape. I mean, there were so many takes that that were usable, but he was able to blend a session out of that. So those two records have a lot in common, and circumstances that probably people got hurt or arrested at best.
That is terrific. We're talking to Steve Propes, and by the way, a lot of people call me all the time, ask me questions about records, and compared to Steve, I know absolutely nothing, trust me. So if you have any questions about anything having to do with those old school records, yeah, now's your chance. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. James, well, there it is, proof, the power of positive drinking. I always wondered where they got those people screaming all night long. So basically, just inebriated patrons, Huggy Boy's friends?
Yeah, sort of a impromptu fan club. you know, if I invite you to a session where you know there's going to be a free hooch, it's tough to turn it down, I think. But then again, it's a matter of who you're talking to, I guess.
Well, you know what's so wonderful is that there was so little money involved in this. When we talk sessions, literally, we're talking, you know, tens of dollars or hundreds of dollars at most. And so you could take a chance. You could have a good time. And I think the label owners wouldn't know this stuff if they fell over it. They just wanted a hit. So,
well, I'll tell you, though, Huggy, Joe Houston, who went by at times Big Joe Houston and Mighty Joe Houston. He actually, physically, he wasn't that big a guy, but he sure blew a major league sax, tenor sax. He recorded this for Lovin' John Dolphin of Dolphins of Hollywood on Vernon and Central. And so you're saying you weren't making much. That let me put it this way: he made a lot in personal appearances, record royalties. I think some money is still owed. So he went around to every label that he recorded for. He went to RPM Records and other labels and put down all night long, all over again. It's sort of hard to discern which version you're listening to. It could be the original on Money Records, Dolphins label. Could be any old label that Joe Houston recorded for. He had that song in his pocket and was willing to share it with whoever called for a session.
I'm so glad you brought up John Dolphin, because, of course, you know, this is one of the best. Firstly, I loved the guy when he came up with Dolphins of Hollywood, because it was such a wonderful pimp, since he wasn't allowed to own a store in Hollywood, that he put one on Central Avenue and call it Dolphins of Hollywood. But yes, he never heard of a royalty he had to pay. And so it was, ultimately, as you well know, he was blown away. Now, when you read about the murder, and you read about all the stories, you read about the disgruntled songwriter who allegedly killed him. Right. I never have found anything about, was this guy tried? Was he sentenced? What happened to him? What did happen to this guy?
Actually, I met a musician who came. He was a friend of Ed Carter, who was a later member of the Medallions, and he sang with him. And I can't think of his name, but he was actually a cellmate of Percy Ivy,
right,
at Chino Prison, and I asked him to tell me a little bit about Percy Ivy, his cellmate, what Percy had told him, and he said, no, he was my cellmate, and I can't rat on him. So he gave me a lot of great stories about Clarksdale and Elmore James and people like that, but he never shared his experiences with the man who shot Lovin' John Dolphin.
Well, okay, so here's the deal. Was his name Percy Ivy?
Yeah.
Okay, so that, because see, I tried to research this, and I'm not like you, I'm not good at this at all, but I could not come up with any evidence that Percy Ivy existed other than the stories about the murder of John Dolphin. And I thought, well, maybe it was just a nom de plume or something. So his name was Percy Ivy. Do we know, is he a Californian?
That I don't know, because I couldn't get the information
Nothing.
Out of his. I know where he was. Where he did his time, Chino Prison, out in, east part of Southern California. I know a little bit about the story, how who was there when he was shot.
Yeah, right, but Bruce Johnson and Sandy Nelson, as I recall.
Yeah, and after the murder, Sandy Nelson was holding a bottle of Pepsi, and he ran out to find a cop, and shaking up the Pepsi, and it sprayed all over the place, while I think it was Bruce, could have been Sandy, was talking to Percy after the after he shot him about collaborating with him as a songwriter.
Yeah.
He was making a deal at the scene. Now that could possibly be apocryphal, but it was, I think Bruce Johnson told me the story.
I wouldn't be in the least surprised about that. But okay, so we know he was in Chino, so at least we know he was a convicted, or he wouldn't have been there. But
he was
a
real person.
A real person who was really convicted, and then we don't have any release dates. I mean, I've even gone through the California prison system trying to find him. That's why I thought maybe it wasn't his name.
Well, now I gave you a clue, Chino Prison.
Yes, I will be looking, because that is one of those stories that is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine what Bruce and Sandy, and I think Dave Shostak was there too, had thought when this guy comes in and just kills him, you know.
They were R&B fans. They were fans. They lived in Pacific Palisades, but they were R&B fans, so they came down to the big city to talk to John. Maybe had John not met a early end, he might well have recorded these guys. He might have had the first Beach Boys record. Who knows?
I wouldn't be surprised. And we'll talk about some of those early records. We're talking to Steve Probst. Those Old School Records is the current book wherever books are sold. I used to link to Amazon, but they stopped me. But you can find it, no doubt about it, and you should find it. Only thing is, when it comes in the mail, don't open it until you've got some time, because you will be reading it. All right, we're going to find out what's going on in the world at large and get right back to it right here on WGN Radio.
To Mexico, I tried to find a girl to love. can't find the girl to satisfy me. Have love. Well, baby, now we'll travel. Say,
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Of course, that's Richard Berry and the Pharaohs on Flip 1960. And you can't talk about those old rock and roll and rhythm and blues records without talking about Richard Berry. And of course, in those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM singles, 1946 to 87, Steve Probst has certainly covered the Richard Berry landscape. And I think the story of Richard is one of the saddest things. Of course, in the end, before he died, he got the royalties back. But here he is writing Louie Louie, and well, you know what happened.
I don't know if you know it or not, but I have the chart. That actually charted on KFWV, Color Radio, Top 40. I think the first Top 40, Have Love Will Travel, was like 39 or something like that.
Well, that's great.
So that's encouraging. Richard Berry was a hell of a lovable guy. Just a wonderful person. Not much has been written about him. Mm-hmm. He had a chance, pun not intended, he had a chance to sign with Chess Records, but someone, the L.A. Chess guy, vetoed the signing, and I'll never understand why. I'm not going to mention any name.
Yeah.
But I think he would have done well on Chess Records. Anyway, Richard went to Jeff High, and he went to Fremont High, but he was most associated with Jeff, and he met Dorothy, and Dorothy swept his heart away, and he did some dough to get married, $750, and he'd already recorded Louie Louie, a bit of a local hit in L.A., and well, this record has come and gone. I don't need it anymore, so he sold the rights to his Louie Louie to Max Firetag of Flip Records, his the label owner, for $750 to finance his wedding. Well, the wedding, the marriage didn't last, but guess what about Louie Louie? It sort of had a life of its own.
No kidding. And, you know, I guess technically Max owned the rights, for better or worse. How did finally Richard Berry prevail to get some rights back?
Well, there was a lawyer, Chuck, I think his name was Chuck Rubin. He made a career about obtaining rights for people that had lost them in similar transactions, and was able to help Richard. Of course, he got a rather handsome payday for doing that.
Right.
So everybody won. But yeah, Richard was a millionaire towards the end. But it took a lifetime to restore his his rights. Richard was a very modest guy, no pretensions. He worked yard parties and did a lot of local appearances, and was one of the best liked people in the Southern California rhythm and blues scene. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything
and the Doo-Wop Society did a lot. Well, we didn't do much. Society didn't do much to keep him in the public's eye, but they did their part.
Absolutely. No, it was wonderful to see, and I'll forever think that it became a hit only because the Kingsmen, who were trying to imitate Richard Berry, weren't good enough to do it. And, you know, hence...
Yeah, but they sure got the FBI involved.
Well, wasn't that hilarious? And one of my favorite little radio contests was WTMA in Charleston, who said, send us a postcard, you know, and a self-addressed stamp envelope or whatever, and we'll send you all the four-letter words in Louie Louie. And they got, like, over 500,000 entries. And, of course, you know, they sent them back with ship and all that kind of stuff. So it was as you'd expect. But, yeah, the FBI investigated that and Puff the Magic Dragon while we're at it.
Well, what was the conclusion? Unintelligible at any speed.
Yeah.
something like that.
And it was.
They nailed it.
Yeah, it was. It was just terrible. That was one of those, it's so bad, it's good.
The first pressing, the mistake pressing, was it was pressed up under the title of Louis Lovey, L-O-V-I-E, I guess somebody at the pressing plant took it upon himself to decide no record could possibly have that title. And I discovered that original pressing at a house party I went to.
Oh, man.
And I was looking at, through the records, and there it was. And somehow that record disappeared. And then a few days later after that party, I discovered that some sneak thief had taken that record and put it in my record collection. I'll never know how that happened.
I won't either, but that's absolutely amazing. I love that. Well, and that takes me to your very first book, which I think was probably, I didn't even know you at the time you wrote it, but it was a wonderful book, Those Oldies But Goodies, A Guide to 50s Record Collecting. And you know, when we're talking 1973, of course there is no internet and all that kind of stuff. I mean, Val Shively sitting in his living room sending out mailing lists, and Lee's Dinette Music Center in Miami. I mean, you can count really on one hand the places you could go. So with that in mind, what caused you in 1973, I'm going to write a book about it?
Well, I had written an article on record collecting for L.A. Times magazine that I submitted a manuscript, and they were about to buy it, and then the magazine folded, and I thought, well, heck, I'll send it to a publisher. My idea was people are literally throwing records away, and the more people throw records away, the less records there will be for others to enjoy. So it was a way of trying to alert the public at large that their old records might be worth some money. I think it was the first effort at that, and it got me some threatening responses on the part of collectors who like to keep those things secret. Of course, me being one of them, I had to make the hard choice, you know, and so I went with the true scene, and it was. I'll tell you, I think the first book to detail the fact that old records are worth a few bucks.
Right, and it, like collecting anything, the stuff that's going to be worth the most money is not the big hit by Frank Sinatra or the Beatles. It's going to be the thing where there were, you know, six records, or the record was released and then it was pulled back, you know, like
right.
like the famous story about Berry Gordy and all that. You know, there are some that are the holy grails that I half wonder, do they exist? And I'm trying to think of it, what it was right now, but there was one record. Everybody said the 45 version of this is worth $1 million. And ultimately, I don't think there was a 45 version. I think it was only on 78. And you probably know the record I'm thinking of.
Well, there's several that meet that definition. But Rocket 88 by Jackie Brinson was one of them. When it came out, it was a 78 only. But then Chess used the original label design to reissue it on 45 after Bill Haley put out a version, and they were going to cover the cover, but that didn't work, so they put out very few copies of that. That's worth some serious money. The original Chess reissue in 1956 of a 1951 Chess label hit. Now you figure that one out.
Right. The Five Sharps, that was what it was. Stormy Weather.
Oh, Stormy Weather, sure.
On Jubilee. And I've seen it on 78, and the 45 was supposedly worth so much money. I've never seen that on 45, have you?
No, I don't think it exists, but bootlegs of it on 45 exist.
Oh, of course.
Various colored vinyl and all sorts of fantasy labels. So, Weather, the Five Sharps, the Times Square special.
Right, exactly. And a lot of things came out of Times Square, mostly courtesy of Jerry Green, actually. But the one I was thinking of, because John was going through my collection once, he said, oh my God, you've got a $35,000 record. Well, of course it was a boot, but it was Do I Love You, Frank Wilson. And that was another thing. I don't think a record's ever sold for more money in Great Britain than that. So obscurity sells.
I know how the record escaped from Motown.
Yeah,
it was a drug deal.
Was there an ex-wife involved in this?
No, there was a medical doctor who had access to Quaaludes, and the person that made sure the record left the label's archives had a liking for Quaaludes, and so that was a straight-out trade. That's probably the world's rarest record, rarest 45, Northern Soul favorite.
Yes.
I interviewed Frank Wilson, and the reason it's rare, Barry Gordy was set to release that on Soul Records. It was a great record, and he came to Frank Wilson and said, "You got a choice. You can either be a songwriter or a singer." And Frank chose songwriter, so Barry Gordy spiked the release, and that was it. So that I think two copies existed in the Motown files, and I think they both escaped and are floating around somewhere right now, probably in England.
Yeah, right, exactly. Going for more than the price of a house. So,
or at least a cottage.
Well, right, and the stories are so great. Now, I haven't read every word of the book yet, so I don't know if you talked about him, but I'm sure you knew him, Kent Harris.
Oh yeah, sure, Boogaloo.
Yeah, the original, and the Gallant Crew.
Yeah, did the original Shopping for Clothes.
Yeah, Clothesline.
Lieber Stoller and became. Well, it was Clothesline, right, by Boogaloo on Crest Records.
Right.
Crest Records was a funny label. Eddie Cochran had his first, not his first appearance. Actually, he recorded for Dolphin, believe it or not, before that. But, you know that. Eddie Cochran recorded for Crest. It was a label, they'd issue songs and hoping that they'd... be picked up so they could sell the publishing. They didn't intend for them to be hits. They intended for them to get noticed. So anyway, as Boogaloo, he recorded Clothesline for Crest Records, and he recorded Cops and Robbers.
Right.
It was later picked up by Bo Diddley.
So. Right. Wonderful song. And you mentioned Crest, and my favorite is still going to be Prince Partridge, How Come My Dog Don't Bark.
Crest was a record label that featured songwriters doing their own compositions, hoping that they'd get picked up by a major label. But sometimes they got picked up and the original songwriter was sort of left in the dust.
Well, that was a Shopping for Clothes, and you know, that was one of those stories where Lieber and Stoller claimed that, what was it, Billy Guy came to him and said, I heard this on the radio or whatever, and he just gave us a couple words, like all of them, you know.
Well, but we'll change the title, so it'll be ours.
Right, yeah. Yeah, just these are all such great stories. And,
I talked to Kent Harris. Let me just interrupt for a second.
Tell me.
He, towards the end of his professional life, at least, he ran a swap meet, I think, near San Diego. I think in the Vista area, if I could be mistaken. But if you wanted to reach him, you had to call the payphone near his booth at the swap meet, and he'd answer the phone. So that's how I got an interview with him. And when he stopped answering, I had no other way of reaching him.
Yeah, he made it until a couple of years ago. I think he died like in 2019. But I thought this guy was just terrific and so underrated. And, when he called himself Boogaloo, that's long before anybody was boogalooing down Broadway. That's for darn sure.
He had his own label. Well, what was the name of his label?
Yeah.
He had a funk label and had some hits on that. And he was involved in setting up a chain of record stores in L.A., too.
Yeah. He was an entrepreneur in the true sense of the word. And
Dimples Harris was his sister, and he recorded her. And
Harris sisters, yeah.
And she, dig this, she was on Crest, too. I mean, it was a... the family got involved, so everybody was having a good time.
Great, great source. We're talking to Steve Propes, those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM singles. If you got any questions, I'm telling you, this is the guy who's got the answers. Don't ask me. Steve knows off the top of his head. And not putting him on the spot here, but I guarantee you he'll live up to that if you call. 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH on WGN Radio.
I was walking down the street minding my own affairs when two policemen grabbed me unawares. They said, "Is your name Henry?" I said, "Oh, why, sure." They say you the boy we've been looking for. Put me in the lineup and let the bright light shine. I'm a ten-pole soul like me standing in that line. I knew I was a victim of someone's evil plan when a stew pigeon walked in and said, that's the man.
WGN Radio, I'm Riley James, and yeah, that's Bobby Nunn on lead, of course, the Robbins framed Lieber and Stoller, and of course, much has been written, including by Steve Probst, about the Robbins prior to some of them becoming the Coasters, but afterwards, the Robbins that remained, Ty Terrell and all, who went to whip it and did all those things with Gene Norman, some of those records weren't bad. What did you think, Steve?
Oh, Cherry Lips was great.
Yeah.
You know, the Whippet label was designed after the RCA label.
Right.
Yeah.
Both dogs, yes.
he decided to rip off, what's the name
Nipper.
Of the
Yes, Nipper.
Yeah, and create his own Nipper. Yeah. So, you know, everybody was borrowing from everybody. Now, Framed, of course, was an answer record to Riot Cellblock Number 9, and that gets us back to Richard Berry because he was hired as a temporary lead singer of the Robbins to replace Bobby Nunn, who didn't sound menacing enough to take the lead on Riot and Cellblock Number 9. And then Modern Records, who had Richard Berry under contract, found out that he went to another label and sang with the Robbins. Of course, you couldn't miss it on Riot and Cellblock Number 9, so they had him record The Big Break, which is a very weak variation on Riot and Cellblock Number 9, so everybody was in on the act. Come on.
Yeah, it was the Wild West, and that would happen so often. You know, we start getting into Vibrations and Marathons and everything else over the years. It's the hour goes by too fast, so I have to ask you, I know you did an update of what was the first rock and roll record.
Right.
Has anything changed? Have we got another first?
No, we've still got the first 50 as we judge them, but I think that the debate carries on, which in fact was the first rock and roll record from blues and the Honey Dripper all the way up to Heartbreak Hotel. The choice is yours, dear reader. We just lay out the candidates,
and they are just great. And also, you have to define what you mean by rock and roll record, and if you're talking airplay involved and all that kind of stuff. So many arguments can be made, and you make all of them in there. So what are you working on now?
Working on trying to sell this book.
Okay.
Actually,
how do I help?
No, actually, I have another book on L.A. Rock and roll. Sort of, I've been dealing, you know, tinkering with this concept for quite some time, and you know, people that you wouldn't think of as part of the L.A. rock and roll scene, like Lalo Guerrero. Here's another one. Here's KFWB in 1959, the record by Bob Grabow, Charge. Remember that one?
Yes.
Charge. Okay. KFWB wrote a big disclaimer saying why it wasn't going to be charted because it only had topical interest for the moment, so they said it sold enough that we should chart it, but we're not going to chart it because it only has topical interest. Well, wait a second, KFWB is gone and Charge lives on every
forever.
Time you go to Dodger Stadium. So
amen. Now hang on a minute if you don't mind. I got a few more questions I want to ask before I let you go. Is that all right?
Okay.
All right, we'll pick it up right there with Steve Probst on WGN Radio.
Love land and all of its miniatures. the answer. Got to take me with you, baby.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and yeah, I've heard all about Loveland. A lot of people have heard about Loveland. In fact, more people than Charles Wright was counting on, or maybe Charles Wright didn't know about it. We're going to talk about that soap opera. It's in those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM singles, 1946 to 87. Steve Probst wrote the book, and it is available. I assume it is available everywhere. Is that right, Steve?
Yeah, it's available from the publisher. It's available on Amazon. I haven't checked any local bookstores to see if it's available because we don't have any local bookstores anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you checking? Now, do you have a website?
Not really.
Okay. That's good. That's old school. All right. So,
it's a good idea, but yeah. No, not at the moment.
Well, that would take effort. But I'm talking about here Loveland, one of my all-time favorite records, which turned out is older than most people knew, older than Charles Wright claimed to know. What's the story?
Okay, the story is fairly straightforward, but sort of frustrating for Charles Wright. The song was brought to him by a group singer, L.A. group singer named Don Trotter, who had was associated with the Untouchables, mm-hmm. the Valiants, those guys.
Yeah.
And he brought the song to Charles Wright. He had recorded it for Josie Records.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles liked the song, and he said he worked on it for months to try to get it the way he wanted it. It wasn't easy. And he rehearsed the guys, and it drove him crazy, and he almost gave up on it, but he kept plowing through, and finally came up with the arrangement he wanted, and they sang it the way he wanted, and boom, it came out, and it was a chart record, and he was performing it at concerts. He'd perform it, and then each concert he was at, a guy would come up to him and say, I want to talk to you about Loveland. And he'd sort of blow him off. And finally, he got tired of the guy approaching him, and so he said, okay, what's the problem? And he says, that song was first done by my uncle, and he didn't get any credit for it. And Charles took it to his lawyer, and the lawyer played him the original record by, of all people, Al Hibbler.
Right.
And Charles heard Al Hibbler's version and said, we're not going to fight this. It's his song. So he had to forego at least half the royalties to the Hibbler. I don't know if Al Hibbler was still alive at the time. I think he was. And he had to forego the royalties and the song that belonged to someone else. He wasn't too fond of Don Trotter after that, I'll tell you.
Oh, I guess not. And Trotter left and then did a sound alike to it, which was really strange.
Yeah, and I can't think of the name of it. But
it's for the best.
you know, we're talking about a lot of records.
Yeah.
The singer that was involved with Wright at the time took the song and did his own sound alike under a new name. I can look it up.
Right. I've got it on this computer, I know, but, you know, the song. But it does sound a lot, maybe it's on the computer in the other studio. But yeah, it was real weird because when I heard the Don Trotter follow-up, it's like, wait a minute, this is the same record.
Yeah, well, sure. That often happens when you hear the same record.
Right.
Let me see if I can find
it here. Kidnapper by Jewel and the Rubies, and that was a total rip, too, from, I'm trying to think of who the guy was. Well-known artist, too, one of the Don Robiacs.
Okay, here, I'll create some dead air by looking it up.
Right, of course. Well, we could always listen to something. God knows there's a lot. And I did want to talk about Dory Records, too, because when I think of, L.A. R&B, of course, you know, you love the Leon Renee labels and the classes and all that. And you mentioned Crest and so many others. But Dory, to me, was like the most unlikely home for R&B, you know, Lou Bedell and Herb Newman. How did they get into that?
It's a good question. I think they figured they could make some money. I mean, they made plenty of money on Zany's records, Beware of the Blob.
Right.
That, so, but I don't think that Beware. Okay, let me see here. James Gadson, Got to Find My Baby.
Right, right. That is it. That is it. Got to Find My Baby. It's the same record.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's, you know, it's that same vocal. So James
right.
Gadson was and continues to be a well-known soul and funk. That's funk, F-U-N-K, drummer.
Right,
and
right.
And when he left Charles Wright's band, he took the idea with him. So,
yeah.
But anyway, getting to Dory, my goodness.
Yeah.
In fact, the Whispers were originally on Dory. No,
that,
no,
yes, they were. Were. And
they
that's...
were originally on Dory as the Whispers. They
yes.
were the Utopians.
Yes, but no, the Whispers stuff. I mean, you write about Never Again in the book, but there's so many things. And of course, the
yep.
thing about the Whispers, which you know, I'm sure you're well aware of this, but talk about bad timing. I mean, no one ever thought about the Whispers for quite a while. You know, Dory or Soul Clock or Janice or whatever. Yeah, right. So what? So here they come. They're about to have their first number one record, and one of them is arrested for robbery. You know, remember that? It was December 27th, 1979. And not only was it robbery, it was a jewel theft involving a mail truck.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to get some jewels, I think a mail truck. Well, maybe you should go for a Brinks truck.
Right.
That
well,
happened
yeah. well, apparently one of them knew somebody in the mail industry. But in any event, Leibel DeGree did about 4 months. He got the light sentence out of the guys. But you know,
oh, okay.
I've thought about that to this day, is how could the timing have been worse? If that happened a year earlier, it wouldn't have even been a headline.
Oh, I see. Because who'd ever heard of this? Just
right, right. And now they've got a number one record. I mean, here they're putting out record after record and some great stuff. I Was Born When You Kissed Me. I mean, there were just killer Dory records that no one ever heard of. And,
I get your point.
Yeah, yeah.
I get you. Timing is everything.
It is everything, yeah. Absolutely.
So,
well, great, great stuff. Now, John from Waukegan has a question, and I'm so glad to hear that. So, John, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yes, I would like your guest to give me a few answers here. He was talking about the fathers of rock and roll. I heard it was Big Joe Turner.
Right.
Big Mama Thornton.
Sure.
Hound Dog.
Chuck Berry.
Sure. Absolutely. All killer rightful names.
Yeah.
Nat King Cole. I heard he just about Bill Cap. He was started singing right around the time that Capitol Records was.
Oh yeah, and Steve can back me up on this. The iconic building in Hollywood is known as the house that Nat built. Nat King Cole was everything, but you know he hated rock and roll.
Yeah, he had more of a pop and jazz vocal style. But the story of Nat Cole is sort of I don't know if it's instructive, but he was with a show. Black traveling show called Shuffle Along, and they showed up in the L.A. area, Long Beach, which is where I am right now and have been for a number of years, and they got stranded in Long Beach, and so he had the show broke down. He was from Chicago, no way of getting back home, so he started singing local gigs and hooked up with labels here, and his career started because he ended up with Shuffle Along being closed down because they ran out of money, and that was the best thing that ever happened to him.
Absolutely, and here's Capitol, which is a fledgling new label, and what a perfect relation. I'll tell you what, as you probably, Steve, know better than I, it certainly put Frank Sinatra's nose at a joint, and I think that's what started the Reprise label.
Yeah, Reprise. Like I said, yeah. Reprisal.
Yeah.
Sure. Go ahead.
Yes. Jumpin', let me see. One more question about him. Did he had him and his wife had a daughter, but didn't he adopt a son?
I thought it was a daughter that he adopted, but there are adopted kids in this. Yes, and
I think the daughter was
Natalie was his biological child, and they were had split for a while, but I think there were twin girls who were younger, I sort of know about this. Steve may know more than I do, but I lived in Hancock Park, and Nat King Cole's family were neighbors to us, and I think they totally had five kids ultimately. Mm-hmm. And I know Natalie was the oldest one, but I think there probably was a boy, but I thought it was the twins who were adopted, but I don't know. What do you know, Steve?
No, I'm not aware of Nat's family other than what you already. Interesting how what a small world it is, though, isn't it?
Well, what was really weird is they moved to Hancock Park, and it was just really awful because, you know, this was a neighborhood that hadn't been integrated, although it was not all that far from neighborhoods that were, and neighborhoods that were predominantly African-American. But someone actually knocked on his doors to say, we don't want any undesirables here. And Nat, just cool as a cucumber, said, well, I don't either, and I'll let you know if I see any. So, Carol was the adopted girl, and I think Maria, you know, as you probably know, John, his marriage was somewhat open, much to the chagrin of Maria, and Carol was the daughter of Maria's sister, and so she was adopted, but I'm trying to remember, because I do think there was a boy, but you know, I was a girl, so I didn't know.
Wow, you got the story down.
Oh, okay. One more, and then I'm going to get out of your hair here. Jumping from classical music to blues, Little Walter, you have any information on him?
Well, he was, the dominant harmonica blues guy in the Chicago chess checker blues scene, and... died at an early age. Pictures of him show a great big scar right across the middle of his face. So he was not afraid to get out there and enjoy the streets for what it's worth. Little Walter Jacobs was one of the guys that helped Chess Checker Records, along with Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters, get started. So.
He came to Chicago to sing. He didn't grow up there, John. He was from Louisiana, but I think it was, 16? Stevie came to Chicago with demos. And,
wow.
I think originally there was a deal. There's a little label on Maxwell Street. And, John, if you're really interested in early R&B in Chicago, look for labels like... what the heck was the name of this? It was right on Max. Oranel. Oranel. You would know well. And, there were people like Sonny Boy Williamson and Little Walter. And Little Walter joined Muddy Waters. And that's how we got to chess.
And Muddy Waters had the first version of Rollin' and Tumblin'. It's in the first rock and roll record book.
Yeah.
Wasn't Oranel, I think it was on Parkway, and Chess had him re-record it, but the original version was just a killer version. And Rollin' and Tumblin' was issued on Herald Records under Little Walter's name, so everybody got a little piece of the action.
You're right, right.
Walter have some kind of way... do something with his harmonica, like electrified it or something, what they call it.
Well,
hooking it up to the...
I know that he did a lot of unamped stuff, but as far as...
Amplified. Yeah, I think he had the...
Later amplified.
Amplified harmonica.
Yeah, later.
He was jealous of the amplified guitar, so...
Right.
He just had his harmonica amplified.
Right. And, recently, of course, with Tina dying, Ike Turner's been in the news, and it was Ike who tried to get Little Walter to go to modern. And he was actually thinking about doing it and wound up instead that he went to Checker.
Ike Turner recruited a whole lot of people for Modern Records and for Chess Records. He was a talent scout for both of them, and from Clarksdale, Mississippi, and originally came up to record Rocket 88 with Jackie Brent.
Yeah.
So here's Tina, who passed away. Big news. I mean, that continues to dominate the headlines, and people are sending me flyers when she used to appear at. In Long Beach, California. My favorite one so far was sent to me by a mutual friend, Raleigh Dave of Long Beach, who showed that she was performing, dig the name of this club, the Gay 90s.
Oh, yeah.
in Signal Hill.
Yes, yes, yes.
Let's go over to the Gay 90s and catch Tina Turner and her show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, at least she was Tina Turner. I mean, if the early stuff, she was Little Ann.
Yeah, Little Ann, Box Top on Toontop Records.
Right, exactly.
Toontown Records. I have the single. It's pretty well worn, but I also have that alleged Chuck Berry single on Chuck Barrel.
Right. But John, you talk about Lil Walter. You know, when he was basically one of the Chess stable, you can hear his work on everybody from Bo Diddley to Shel Silverstein. I mean, it's across the board. Unfortunately, he had two problems. As Steve alluded, he never met an argument he wouldn't engage in. So there were violent altercations, but there was notorious temper, but notorious alcoholism. And that really was the problem in terms of terms of all that. But
we dug his music, right?
Yeah.
Juke.
Tina Turner, when she moved to Switzerland, did she perform over there? Or
yes.
She just retired.
No. Originally, she went. Not only the boyfriend, but the other reason that she went there was because she was in so demand. And Steve might know more than me, but one of her tours over there probably made her richer than anything else she had done. So yeah.
Well, it certainly made her richer than her parents at the Gay 90s.
Oh, God. Well, that's right. And, yeah. And you can also hear Little Walter on some Coco Taylor stuff, too, if you're looking, John. So if you're interested, you got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the session guys at Chess Records were world famous.
Yes, you betcha.
And Willie Dixon backed up a lot of those sessions.
Oh, yeah. And another great, great writer, built for comfort. All right. So, John, thanks for calling.
Yeah, great question.
Okay.
Appreciate it. All right.
Good night.
You too. Yeah, fun stuff. I could go on and on. So let's do this again, Steve. I know I'll plug it better so we get more calls, because literally people ask me things all the time, and half the time, like, I don't know, but you will. So I hope hope it's a huge seller, those old school records. So
thank you. And anytime you have a question about a West Coast R&B song that. Well, you know them all, so you don't need to come to me. But,
No, that's not true. Hey.
On the exceptional one that you don't know, just give me a buzz, and I'll try to figure it out with you.
You knew Percy Ivy was in Chino. You're my hero tonight. I'm looking that up tonight later. We'll talk to you soon, and thank you for joining us.
Well, it was a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So, Steve Probst, and like I say, I've got the whole list of books, and we can go through each one of them, from those oldies but goodies, A Guide to 50s Record Collecting, to the current, those old school records. So, all right, the rest of the show is up for grabs, as always. Yes, it's an AOR show all over the road, right here on WGN Radio.
I'll give her all the things I know the world has to give. And all I know is I need her to live. I'm gonna fight her. If it takes me all of my life, I'm gonna fight her. I'm gonna have her by my side.
people say I'm no good for nobody. They keep putting me down. Why can't they leave me alone? 'Cause I've been thinking, it looks like I'm looking for someone I can call my own. Oh yeah, I'm gonna
find her.
If it takes me all of my life,
I'm gonna find her.
Even though it takes a while, I'll give her all the things I know the world.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's The Whispers. No, it isn't. It's Tierra. I'm sorry. 1979 Tierra, Gonna Find Her. And that, too, is in Steve Probst's wonderful Those Old School Records book. And it really is a terrific book all the way around. And I would absolutely suggest that that you get a copy. Like I say, I used to link them to Amazon for your convenience, but they told me to stop that. That's right. They told me to stop that because they said, your links are not for the public. They're for your friends and family. I think I mentioned that before. They kicked me out of Associates, saying that I was not actually properly doing this to the general public. And I thought, now that's interesting, because I never say a word about those links. They're just up there on the page, and you know, listeners from time to time would use them. And well, you know, I guess that's proof you're a family. So there you have it. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And several things we'll talk about, to say the least. But all week long, James from the South Side has been sending story after story, and usually he calls in the last hour of the show, and the show ends, and we don't get to him. So, James, sorry about that, and welcome back to WGN Radio. Are you there, James?
I did like the interview in the first hour. Oh, that was good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Steve is great. He really is. And all of the books are wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I think they once said, at least they were saying about with New York, they said 8 million stories in the naked sea. It looks like it's close to that with that book.
Well, it's funny you say that, because there's a great record on Dory by the Superbs, and that's exactly how it starts out. So I got to find that for you, because that's precisely what she says at the opening. Let's see if I can find. Let's see. Yeah, here we go. I think she does on Storybook of Love. Let's see if this is where she does her little soliloquy. We'll find out together. Nope, it's not. If it's not that, oh, baby, baby all the time, I don't think so, but no, I'll have to find it. That's terrible, but, yeah, 8 million stories and this one's mine. All right, superb. So I've got it here somewhere. Sorry about that. Let's see. Oh, gosh. All right. So, as usual, dumb criminals and a number of stories that are unbelievable. Like I was saying the other night, it's my favorite story of the month, maybe of the year, that the Guardian arrives to pick up the teens arrested for auto theft in a stolen car. And I don't think you can make them up. I mean, it just doesn't get better than that. So.
And then I thought about the policeman who was drunk in a squad car driving into a German precinct, a German town's one, and
okay. Yeah.
When they realized he's a legitimate, and then they have to say, stop talking.
Yeah, I think it was baby, baby all the time. All right, let's back to the superbs a moment here. Let's see if this will in fact get it.
There are 8 million stories in the big city. This is mine.
Baby.
Yeah, baby, baby all the time. There you go.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. The superbs were great.
And then you. You think about, okay, then there's a few, like, okay, where a woman is reunited with her family 50 years after she was abducted by the babysitter her mother had just hired.
Well, that was a pretty good story, because didn't she find out in a very weird way?
Yeah, She was initially not going to put in a blood test, and the blood, apparently the one who would turn out to be her brother said, what do you have to lose?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, I guess if you don't like the family, that could be something. But other than that,
it turned out the babysitter hadn't been particularly not because she had it was abusive, and so she ran away from home as a teenager.
Yeah,
lived on the street.
Yeah,
said. And then speaking of, and that was in Texas. Now Texas might provide at least half of the solution to that long story of the 10-year-old and the 3-year-old who disappeared more than 20 years ago.
Right.
They are testing a woman who at least she might be the, because she remembers somebody that her older being basically they were together, then they weren't together. And like they just separate. And if that's the case, they know that the older one was coached to write that because the level of sophistication in the writing was not what a 10-year-old would be capable of.
Well, speaking of children being capable, I think my favorite story along those lines is the woman who allegedly murdered her husband is saying that a 7-year-old confessed to it.
Very strange.
Yeah. That's right, because after all, he was found under her porch, wrapped up in a tarp pretty much and all that. And yes, oh no, a 7-year-old confessed to that. So yeah, I guess if you've gotten to that point, you're going away. So,
usually the white coats are coming.
Yeah, yeah. Something along those lines will, in fact, happening. And so there's no shortage of murders and dismemberments and things killed children. Sadly, those are always the saddest. But
I was trying to avoid the political ones, and then sometimes end up falling into more mayhem. I'm like thinking,
My favorite was the police were led directly to a suspect by cows. And
That was beautiful.
Yeah, Boone County, North Carolina. Yeah, and apparently it was an individual who led the police and deputies from the sheriff's office on a chase in his car, then abandoned the vehicle and fled into an undeveloped area. And police couldn't figure out where he ran, so while they were searching, a herd of cows was eager to help. And
that basically you could say they're a little bit smarter than you think they are.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, one thing about cows in general is they want to do the same thing today that they did yesterday. They don't like a change in routine. And so I'm not surprised that the cows were upset that somebody had invaded their territory, but I am surprised that according to the officers, and obviously there's a PR person who had far too much time on his hands, the cows didn't want a suspected criminal loitering in their pasture, so they quickly assisted the officers by leading them directly to where the suspect was hiding. The cows communicated with the officers as best they could and finally just had the officers follow them to the suspect's location. Man, I hope somebody had a body cam. I want to see this.
Oh yeah, this might be better than anything that they than any reality program.
Yeah, yeah, it's a certainly will be a hit on Animal Planet. No doubt about that. So
and then of course the 3-year-old who by shooting a suspect ended up finding the murderer.
Right, right. Then you had Alabama police who were pulling over a guy driving a jet ski on the interstate. So I'm sure it wasn't for speeding, but then again, you just never know.
And he was out of state too.
Yes, right. He's out of his mind is what he was. Yes. So all these and more.
then there was a 12-year-old who decided that he was going, had gone to advanced criminal school by robbing and then trying to attempt to pistol whip a 65-year-old woman.
Yeah.
With his 6-year-old in tow.
Right.
6-year-old brother in tow. I'm like, come again. Okay. Okay. The mother, fortunately, led them right to the, then they found, which was actually a BB gun.
So
it had been polished up to look very real look.
Yeah. And, so there you have
it. And somebody said, hey, if this could have gone, if the 65-year-old had been a pistol packing granny, yeah, it would have ended very differently.
Well, as usual, a wonderful bunch of stories, and love them all, and always good that you send them. So no shortage of outrages, to say the least, but somewhat of a shortage of royal stories. I mean, other than the one about the motorcade of hitting and killing a woman, but the tabloids have it all on you this week, because they claim, they do claim that the former queen detests Meghan Markle and calls her evil.
So actually somebody pretty much said, not so much that there was a line, supposedly when the queen tried to give some advice, at least early on, that supposedly Meghan pretty much had said, all I need to have is Harry.
Yes, like, yeah.
And yes. I'm like thinking, okay, I was almost thinking about that movie titled Body and Soul. Unfortunately, Harry, you unfortunately owned Body and Soul.
Indeed. All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Okay.
Appreciate
you
it.
Have a nice weekend.
You too.
And take care and get better.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. All right, so we have a woman who runs over her cheating husband and mistress. This was Australia, though, so we try to stay a little closer to home. We'll talk to John in Covington, Kentucky, and we'll talk to Mark in Aurora, and there's room for you, too, but right now it's the moment I know you've been waiting for. It's time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
There are 8 million stories in the big city. This is mine.
Baby, 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 baby. Once I had a man as sweet as he could be. Baby, once I had a man, he was so right for baby, me. He called me
baby, baby,
all the time.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, I did the opening when we were talking with James, and I thought, I want to hear the whole record, and that is one of my favorites, The Superbs on Dory. Yeah, that's a record I know that Steve knows very well. And, of course, he knows all of the wonderful East L.A. stuff and R&B stuff, but pop as well, and not only East L.A., the world in general. Of course, yeah, gotta mine all that wonderful stuff from New Orleans and a lot of the Muscle Shoals stuff. It's all in those old school records. And what's fun about the book is it is not the kind of thing that you're going to sit down probably and read cover to cover. It's the kind of thing that makes a great coffee table book, because you can just put it there and, you know, open to any page, and you will you'll probably see a song title that you know, like Get a Job, The Silhouettes on Ember. Yeah, and see what Steve had to say about that. And it's almost more like little blurbs. It's not a big treatise or anything like that. It's not scholarly. It's just a lot of fun, and it's a lot of information. Yeah. I was listening to The Superbs and starting my search for Percy Ivy there. I'm intent. Yeah, I want to know now. That's all there is to it. Percy Ivy's the songwriter who shot and killed John Dolphin in Dolphins of Hollywood. And, yeah, when the news broke, it was in every venue. You heard all about songwriter Percy Ivy coming in and just killing him. And then, nary another word. Yeah, I have looked and looked and looked. So this Chino connection, hopefully that is going to be it. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, that's where we're going to pick it up next hour right here on WGN Radio.
Boogum, 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 boogum now, baby, you're casting your spell on me. Now, baby, you're casting your spell on me. You got me doing funny things like a clown. Just look at me. When you wear your high heel boots with your hip hugger suit, it's all right. You're out of sight. And you wear that cute mini skirt with your brother's sloppy shirt. Admit it, girl, that I can't dig it. Then I said, boogum, 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 boogum now, baby, you're casting your spell on me. I say, boogum, 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 boogum now, baby, you're casting your spell on me. You got me doing funny things like a clown. Just look at me.
WGN Radio. I'm Robbie James, and yeah, it's Brenton Wood, Oogum Boogum song, and that's in Steve's Those Old School Records book as well. A fine song on Irwin Zucker's Double Shot label. Yeah, Irwin used to have a company, Promotion and Motion, and he sent all these records around, and then as 45 records were kind of dwindling and there was less work in that available, he started to plug authors and book writers and all that, and I used to trade them years ago. I said, all right, well, I'll have your author of the day on, but you got to get me Brenton Wood. And he did. Yeah, one time I interviewed him. So, I didn't much care. As far as the authors, I have no idea what they wrote. It wasn't like Steve's stuff, to be sure. So I think the last one I think that I did was Frankie Lane's book, That Lucky Old Son. Yeah, it's actually not a bad book. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh. And we got John in Covington, Kentucky. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. I don't know if you remember or not, but last week when we talked, we were talking about Arch Leister.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And
okay.
I should let John know, by the way, that's S-C-H-L-I-C-H-T-E-R. It looks like Schlichter. So, yes,
yeah,
Schlichter.
Well, That's one of them names that come out of a can of alphabet soup.
Well, right, right, exactly. And,
so take it easy on John.
So do we? I mean, he obviously missed the whole saga, and who could blame him?
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, this guy had so much going for him. I mean, he's a pick for the Baltimore Colts, who moved to Annapolis, of course, later, and he's expected to be the starter and all that. And meanwhile, he's gambling to the point that he had blown his entire $350,000 signing bonus by midseason, and that was just the start of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to tell you, mid-90s,
yeah.
I told you he had a radio show on SAI.
Yeah.
Nobody would call. I mean, because it's like... I can't tell you who I like Sunday because I don't bet anymore, you know.
Well, and like, yeah, and come on, you knew
and
that
he was betting. Sure, he was betting.
Of course, he was.
Anyway, during that time period that he was doing the show, in the evenings, he was the quarterback of, it was called the Cincinnati Rockers.
Uh-huh.
They were an indoor football team. The way I understand it, and I'm not, you know, I'm not bragging or anything, but I know people that know people. Anyway, mm-hmm. he was getting like $250 a game.
Yeah,
okay, and
yeah.
If he showed up to practice, he was getting $20. Now, what else did he do? Oh, the Arena Football League. It's only 50 yards. You only have to go 50 yards. Each team goes 50 yards. You start at the 50.
Yeah, and I guess Cincinnati was an expansion team for them. They're not still around, are they? I can't
I know
the Rockers aren't, but I mean the whole league is gone, aren't they?
I would think so, but I know that the average, you couldn't get 500 people at one of them games.
Well, yeah, arena football was, one of those answers to the question nobody had, you know, that kind of thing. It was not not a big interest as far as that goes. But see, what I wondered is how the hell he remained alive, because wasn't there a time when he was going to be, and I think he did, he went to the FBI to rat out a bunch of bookies on federal charges.
I always thought that he would end up in a witness protection program.
Yeah, yeah, in his case, witness protection, but yes. And he went to the FBI and said that, I tried to go to the NFL. I was afraid the bookies would force me to throw the games in return for not telling the Colts about my activities. And so
that's a possibility, yeah.
Well, maybe so, but he named names. So
yeah.
My question is, I understand how he got suspended indefinitely, Pete Rozelle and all that, but I do not understand how somebody didn't kill him.
Do you remember, you might remember this, at Ohio State, he threw the interception. Now, I don't think he did it on purpose, but he threw the interception, and Woody Hayes clotheslined the guy that caught the ball, went down the field. Oh, my. And then Woody lost his job. Arch Leister threw that pass.
Yeah, he was the last starting quarterback for Woody. Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm, sure was.
And, it was not pretty. I think that was the Clemson game, wasn't it? The only reason I vaguely remember this is I did mornings in Jacksonville in 1978, and I think they were in the Gator Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so I think, believe me, the Gator Bowl was not top of mind awareness for me, but I'm pretty sure that was the deal. So
And then I wanted to tell you about the last conversation we had. The name Casey Petrowski
up. Absolutely.
And you knew the guy, and I was like, oh wow, I got to tell her this story. And I'll try to be quick, but anyway, Casey Petrowski was working 9 to midnight,
right,
okay,
on SAI. Right,
and then Jim LaBarbera. He was on WLW.
Right, the music. Right, the music professor. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so Casey decides to have this contest, and you have to know the name of the song. You have to know the artist, and you have to know who wrote it.
Okay.
Okay, so it's 98.6 by Keith.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, everybody was getting the first two. Nobody was getting the... Nobody was getting who wrote it. So I really liked both jocks, you know, so I'd constantly be listening. So I called WLW and I just said, Jim, who wrote 98.6? By God, he gave me the answer, and I called SAI, and I got a Three Dog Night album out of it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, George, I think it was George Fischoff and Tony Powers.
You got it right. I still remember that. Yes.
Yeah, George. Right. George Fischoff wrote "Piano Dancin'," which was a little song that I actually played, and he was so happy I played it on the air that he sent me a postcard. So.
Oh wow.
So yeah, I remember. And you know, I didn't think 98.6 was as good as "Ain't Gonna Lie," but there are some wonderful Keith records, Barry James Kiefer, that never saw the light of day. But so yeah. George Fisher.
Yeah, 98.6. I'm surprised it's not as bigger than it was.
Well,
you know?
It was pretty big. That was Mercury. That was a Jerry Ross deal.
Yeah.
But like I say, I liked "Ain't Gonna Lie" better.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks for the time, Raleigh.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Bye bye.
All right. So yeah, it's been years since I talked to Casey Petrowski, probably 1991 maybe. And he was living in Orange County. And, you know, I bet he still is. I think he might have been teaching college there for a while, too. But he's done some acting since then. I know I see his name come up on things occasionally. And yeah, P-I-O-T is Petrowski. Anyway, 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, we'll get to Mark in Aurora, and there's room for you too on WGN Radio. Yeah, it's the "All Last Night" part I wanted you to hear. That's Floyd Newman, WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and you're saying, who? Well, sadly, you know, we talk about these guys usually only when it's their obit, and that is the case. Floyd Newman was in the Marquis horn section. Of course, that's the Marquis "Last Night," and he was the one saying it.
Oh, yeah.
And there he is, baritone saxophonist, session musician, band leader. Born in Memphis, he was a little older than most of the guys. He was born in 1931. And went to college, he went to Rust, and he was the first guy hired into the B.B. King Review. And, 1961, "Last Night," yeah, he got his famous words. Or not. So, yeah, he said, "Oh, Last Night." That is Floyd Newman, sadly, 91 years old. Yeah, well, that part's not sad, but that he died Tuesday is. He's the guy who brought Isaac Hayes to Stax, and... also had his own band, and they used to perform in West Memphis, Arkansas, and had a number of things there. But mostly he was known as part of the house horn section at Stax. And later, a band instructor for Memphis City Schools, a guidance counselor at Humes and Northside, and he's got a music note in the Beale Street Brass Note Walk of Fame, and his saxophone is in the Stax Museum permanent collection. And 91 years old, died Tuesday. So rest in peace. It was a long and well-lived life. So Last Night. All right, 888-876-5593. Mark in Aurora, what's up tonight, Mark? All right, have we lost Mark? No, there you are. Are you there, Mark?
I want to tell... Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, we've established that. Go, carry on.
Okay. I want to tell Stacy from Algonquin about my insurance company journey and why I'm so happy with the policy I now have. I've got a Humana Gold policy, and I found that when I temporarily moved to Downers Grove, I had to set up a new policy. And then when I moved back to Aurora, I had to set up another new policy. And when I moved back to Aurora, I was fortunate enough to get a phone representative who, despite his thick accent, was very knowledgeable and very thorough. And he got me a policy that I only have $15 copays with doctors outside my network. The doctors inside my network are free. All my prescriptions are free except one.
Hang on a minute. Is this through Medicare? Because there should be.
Yes.
Well, why are there copays?
Those are only for doctors outside the network.
All right, so what you're saying is this is an advantage plan.
Yeah, and I understand it would be worse if I had PPO instead of HMO.
Well, I would disagree with that. If you had PPO, you'd have more freedom of choice. It would cost you more, but you'd have more freedom of choice. The problem with advantage plans is you don't have the choices.
I've had two nurses tell me that HMO is a better way to go because you get more services, and a lot depends on what kind of general practitioner you have. The biggest disadvantage of an HMO is that you have to have your general practitioner approve every doctor that you get matched with. But if your GP is like mine, they will be very efficient and very prompt and very smart.
Well, there's a
lot. There's a lot involved in this.
There is a lot involved in this, and he also should find out how some of these doctors are paid by these HMOs in terms of referrals and what they don't do is usually more valuable than what they do. But I'm not telling people not to do this. I never would. I'd go to veterinary medicine before I'd consider an HMO. But that said, the advantages are it's going to be great costs. There's going to be a lot, it won't cost you much. It's going to have a lot of coverage. But as far as freedom of choice, you deciding I'm going to this facility, no, you probably aren't making that decision. And it's up to you how important that is.
Yeah, I've only had one hitch, and that was when my doctor at the Wheaton Eye Clinic recommended somebody from Loyola, and his hospital wasn't on the network. So
right.
I ended up with a doctor at the University of Chicago, and he was very knowledgeable and very competent. But the thing that I wanted to tell Stacy was that my policy comes with 24 medical rides per year, which means 12 doctor's appointments. And
right.
I'm never going to use anywhere near that much. But I seem to remember that was a concern that Stacy had, was how many rides am I going to get with my policy? And mine gives me 24 year.
All right.
And the rest I could probably get from senior services.
All right. Well, there you go. Like I say, I just urge anybody doing it to look very carefully at the fine print and see what they cannot do. Yeah,
I'm not a fan. Have a phone representative who's very knowledgeable.
Well,
my phone representative said, here's my private number. If you have any questions or concerns whatsoever, you can call and get me directly.
Okay. There you go.
So
all right, thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
For whatever it's worth.
Yeah, there you are. All right, so,
weekend.
Price is what you pay. Value is what you get. 888-876-5593. We'll check out the WGN Radio Newsroom and have another half hour to spend with you right here on WGN Radio.
Once upon a time, a song had melody and rhyme. And lovely ballads used to fill the air. The songs were sweet and lyrical. And sang about the miracle of love in bloom and love beyond despair. But gone are the June songs, the high, the moon songs, and baritones who used to sing romantic are singing songs more frantic than romantic.
a 3 o'clock, a 4 o'clock rock. You gotta sing rock or else you go in hock. 5 or 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock roll. Throw away your senses and your self-control. But brother, I've got news. Mr. Cole won't rock and roll. There's some simple rules of don'ts and do's. If you wanna sell records, stick the rubber soled shoes. Dungarees, bubblegum, peroxide hair. Cause the modern day dream girl's a real nightmare. But no, 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 Mr. Cole won't rock and roll. Now, when a guy has got an eye for some tomato, he would never dare to call her Lady Fair. If he doesn't call his girl
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Alligator. It's over 7 minutes, by the way. Yeah, Mr. Cole won't rock and roll. And yeah, he would do that occasionally in shows, particularly in Vegas. And he was not a fan of rock and roll. But no doubt about it, as rock and roll was really starting to develop, well, there was Nat King Cole on Capitol developing the label, to say the least. And yeah, it was the house that Nat built. All right, Stacy in Algonquin is going to respond to Mark. All right, Stacy.
Hi, Raleigh. I just wanted to respond to
Mark.
To Mark. You know, I have the same thing as Mark with you get rides for medical through our insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I have the same thing about the same amount as Mark does.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't used them yet. But they're for doctor's appointments also. I just haven't used any yet.
Yeah.
But I can. But I just wanted to tell Mark, you know, I think I'll use some of those too. I was just kind of saving them up.
Well, there's no reason not to use them. They'll expire at the end of the year, as far as
that
goes.
He's right. They're just for doctor's appointments
only. Right.
The same amount.
Right. Well, you know, the more you start to use paratransit or other things that are available to you, the more comfortable you're going to be using them, and the less you'll depend upon, you know, friends and other helpers to get you from here to there. And that'll be a good thing. That'll
I'm
be a
terrible.
Good thing.
Well, I didn't use that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will.
No, you absolutely should, because it's again, it's going to be part of the ticket to your independence.
Right, right. I promise I will.
Okay.
I know I have all of this, but I promise I will use them.
Okay.
I will use them. Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Good deal. I'll look forward to it. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll talk to you Monday night for trivia.
Oh, I wanted to have a wonderful, wonderful Memorial Day weekend, you and John, and stay well. And I'm sending all of Stacy's blessings to everybody.
Well, likewise. Thanks, Stacy. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. So,
bye-bye, Raleigh.
Okay, bye. So Memorial Day is Monday, and that doesn't stop me. It'll be a live show from 10 to 1, Monday Night Trivia, live on Memorial Day. And I believe that we have a straggler. I think we have a straggler. Carol set me straight on that. But, yeah, because I lose track of everything. Just give me time. And meantime, we, by the way, the Indy 500 pre-race show this Sunday, because after all, you talk about Memorial Day, you're talking about the Indy 500, too, starts at 9 a.m. Central on WGN. So you're going to want to hear that on Sunday. Tomorrow night is a replay of Monday Night Trivia, so don't call, all right? I say that all the time, but apparently I don't say it enough during the show, because inevitably we get calls. And Carol says you'll hear our straggler from last week, and then you'll take the weekend to figure out the answer. All right, so we have a straggler. Good. Oh, I think I know what it is. Yes, all right. Well, and if I don't, well, I will know what it is before Monday. That's for sure. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And Carol also reminds me, yesterday I promised I'd play Donald Fagen, Walk Between the Raindrops, and I didn't, for Michelle in Geneva. So I will do that next, coming up right here on WGN Radio.
A shadow crossed the blue Miami.
I'm Riley James. It is Donald Fagen. Yeah, Walk Between the Raindrops, and that was Michelle in Geneva who requested we play that after talking with Eduardo in Tampa, his new home. Yes, about South Florida weather, and you know the deal, literally. It, 1 minute it's pouring and it looks like the earth is ending, and 20 minutes later the sun is shining. It's just the way it is. It's funny. When I was living in Nashville, I had a friend come to visit me. Actually, Jim Dunlap, who was the music director at WQAM, later the program director, but he had come into Nashville, and he thought, well, it's raining, I'll just wait, you know. And when I talked to him later, he said, it's been raining for hours. I said, yeah. And so he said, well, this is ridiculous. And then I realized, oh, yeah, most of his life in Florida. I said, it's not like Miami. 2 hours later, the sun will not be shining. He said, what about tomorrow? I said, doesn't look good at this point, Jim. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. And Stephanie is in Madison. What's up tonight, Stephanie?
Hey, Raleigh. I'm just listening, enjoying the show. And I enjoyed your guest. What's his name again?
Steve Propes, P-R-O-P-E-S.
P-R-O-P-E-S.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Propes. Okay, because my husband was very, very familiar with him.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, he was in there watching a documentary on, what's now Max, Tina Turner documentary.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, what a woman and what a life. And Ike, what up? Ooh. Yeah. You know, but the movie, What's Love Got to Do with It, excellent movie. Mm-hmm. Angela Bassett, wonderful. Lawrence Fishburne, I mean, the acting was very on part, really painful to watch at times, but she's awesome. And Tina, rest in peace.
Yes.
But I'm just listening, you know, thinking about music, thinking about Stacey, thinking about, you know, when you talk about independence, it's, you know, there's independence. I think about interdependence, but, you know, you've got to be, the whole thing of going towards independence is you don't want to feel helpless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing. You learn what you can do and what you can control and what you can't. But if you take an attitude of dependence, you've got to use your own power and your own agency. You know, you don't want to be in a situation where you're, it's not a good feeling to feel helpless. But it is a balancing act, because I'm one of these that, sometimes I'm too much the other way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's a book that it's on Wisconsin Public Radio. They have a chapter a day, or they read a book for a half hour every day. It's called Happiness is a Choice We Make. It's by John Leland.
Uh-huh.
And he studied six people for a year. They're all over 85, and talked about, you know, how they deal with their lives and a lot of ways, you know, how you make peace with things and being happy, but talking about choices, you know. But Stacey, you are in my prayers. I wanted to make a request. I love that what you played by Nat King Cole, by the way. I love him.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know, send for me, I guess it's more of a pop, I guess it wouldn't really be rock and roll, but I adore that man. Percy Mayfield, please send me, what is it? Is it too much to ask to send me someone to love?
Okay.
I love that song. I do.
Okay.
Absolutely love Percy Mayfield. So,
all right, send me someone. Sure. Yeah, no, there's a lot of the Nat King Cole records. I think my all-time favorite is That Sunday, That Summer.
Oh, that's a wonderful song.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And Walking My Baby Back Home.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the earlier stuff's with the King Cole Trio and all. But I don't know, there was something about That Sunday, That Summer that just did it for me.
Oh, isn't that lovely? That's a lovely song. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I adore him. I love Nat King Cole. He died so young, you know. It was sad. Evidently, he was not living with his wife when he passed.
Oh, no, no. He had, actually, he went back to her. When,
did he?
And I don't think so much because the marriage was intact, but, you know, he had been living with a blonde bombshell. And
Yeah, Grinnell.
You know, he knew that his time was you know, up and all that. And yeah, he went back to Maria before he died. And I, like I say, I don't think it was like to rekindle the marriage. They both knew exactly what was going to happen. And
Right. And it did.
But yeah, that that family was somewhat of a soap opera, to say the least. But the things that poor man endured were unbelievable. You know, the worst of human nature, unfortunately.
Oh, absolutely. It's so, you know, God, I mean, I am 73, and, you know, I remember, like, back when, you know, I've always been really a fighter for civil rights, and I remember when Martin Luther King was assassinated, and, you know, Bobby Kennedy, and, you know, thinking all these years later, and we're still, it's in some ways it seems, you know, that almost like it's getting worse.
Well, in some ways it absolutely is. But again,
yeah,
you're not able to legislate human nature. You know, it'd be
right. Nice
if we could pass laws to change hearts, but it does not work that way.
Absolutely. You know what I think some of it is that we're more progress we're making, there are certain elements that are getting more and more threatened.
Well,
you know?
It's a deep subject with many, many facets. So I'll
go on to another subject because it is very takes a lot of nuance and a lot of thought. Yeah, I'm with you there absolutely. You know, my husband and I were listening to music tonight, and because he's getting ready to bring his show together, and sometimes it's the funniest thing. He was playing it was a Eric compilation, had songs from the '60s, like late '60s and like 1970, and one of these songs came up. Are You Staying After Sunday? The Peppermint Rainbow.
Yes,
you're probably. Yeah,
I'm well aware of it.
I know, you probably got, but it hit me. You know, there, when you hear music, it can just take you. You're right there in the scene. You can see, you know, everything that happened. Like when they, one of the songs that came up was "Shame, Shame" by the Magic Lanterns.
Right.
And I remember the guy that I was dating pulled up in his car, and LS was on the radio, and that song was playing, and I'm getting in the car. It was early evening. It was dark out, and but that song, I told my husband John. I said I'm getting teary. Was this You Staying Here for Sunday? It just brought back this whole scene. I was with one of my best girlfriends, Patty. We're at her apartment, and remember that song coming on and. Just, you know, the time of day, it was early, I was in the spring 1970, and it was just, everything was just, you know, I was really enjoying life, and making friends, and just everything was just so alive, you know, and it just, and John said the song for him that, you know, gets him is that, Oh Me, Oh My by Lulu, which is a really great song, you know, it gets him emotional. There's certain, it's just a funny thing how, say,
So here we go. You're a fan of the Peppermint Rainbow, of course. So you'll be staying after Sunday, April of 69. What was the follow-up?
That I do not know.
Don't wake me up in the morning, Michael.
Oh, no.
Not if you're planning to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
You don't remember that, huh?
No, ma'am.
Yeah,
they
were from Baltimore. And,
yes.
And actually, Will You Be Staying After Sunday was a top five record on KHJ and did very well there in L.A. for whatever reason. But, they followed it up with Don't Wake Me Up in the Morning, Michael.
Oh, my goodness. Well, John said he thought they sound kind of like Spanky and Our Gang.
Yeah.
And then we came up with the new Seekers singing the Look What They've Done to My Song, Ma, written by Melanie,
Pain.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I mean, of course, the soundtrack of your life, whatever songs do it. I must admit that. I don't go anywhere when I hear the Peppermint Rainbow. You know, it doesn't bring back any memories other than maybe changing the station.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, but that's, you know, Viva la Difference.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, yeah. Good deal. Well, thanks.
Oh, hey.
You've ended the show.
To talk to you on Monday, my dear.
Yes,
have
you will.
Great.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.
All right. So that is a wrap. We thank Adam. We thank John. We thank you. Monday Night Trivia was the next live show. Don't call tomorrow. It's a replay, but enjoy Monday Night Trivia replay tomorrow. Until then, I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.